Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 19.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to The Dark Paranormal, Season 19, Episode 9. It's our penultimate episode of the season, and we've got literally one hell of an episode for you. A quick update on the missing episode for this season. I doubt we're going to get that released and cleared at all, sadly. However, on sheer happenstance, by going through some other emails, and indeed my spam folder, I did find something rather excellent that I'm hoping I can make something with, and after speaking with the individual, after only seeing it today, have something really special lined up for the week before the start of Season 20, and where we would normally play you an older episode of Dark Bites, instead have something that is kind of much more fitting considering we're entering our 20th season. Next week, of course, we have our finale for Season 19, and believe me when I say you do not want to miss that episode at all. But let's not overlook today's episode. Because our penultimate experience for Season 19, it's not just another ghost story. It's a deeply affecting memoir of survival, grief, and that strange comfort that comes from knowing we're not alone in our suffering, both physically, mentally, and also spiritually, even if it takes decades to realise it. Now, I don't take praise very well at all. As I've said many a time, I'm just the reiterator of experiences sent to me. But one thing that always brings a smile to my lips is when somebody mentioned in their experience at the beginning that listening to the show has allowed them to give themselves the strength and power to submit what may have been something they've always and would have always kept to themselves. And my smile comes from the fact that it is you guys who are this self-perpetuating cycle of reinforcement of our belief systems. And that's something I never, ever truly expected this show to become, and it has, and it blows my mind daily. So the biggest of thank yous to everyone who's listened, who submitted, who spread the word about the show, and allowed this show to become what it has become. Something I never thought or even dreamt it would be. And whilst we're on thank yous, I need to of course thank our wonderful team over at Patreon that allow this show to keep running. By choosing to maybe treat yourself for once and become a member of our Patreon team, not only will you receive everything on our main feed, both ad-free and before everyone else, including debuts and finales, you can also gain full access to Dark Bites. Dark Bites is a weekly Patreon-only podcast of 30 minutes worth of the shorter stories we receive. And there is a full back catalogue of well over 100 hours of Dark Bites for you to sit and binge at your leisure. And I'm being serious when I say some of the best paranormal experiences we've ever covered have come direct from Dark Bites. And they've only been for Patreon ears, with the exception of maybe 2 hours out of that 100 that we've aired on the main feed. And to save the best till last, you get to join our wonderful community. And I know I say this each and every week, but to me, it still is something which I find almost miraculous. This self-sustaining, wonderful, positive, open-minded group of courteous, polite, paranormal enthusiasts, hopefully just like you. So if that sounds like you, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Just like the following wonderful new team members have. Alghero, C, Mark Lakin, Jennifer Voss, Joe Shottek, ES, Callie, Jordy Moss, Shelley, Jennifer B, Travis LaFoon, Annie, Amy G, Laura Bright, Gemma Singer, Art419, Ruth Emmett, Claire P, Peter Stipe, Hawkins530, and Emily. Thank you so, so much, guys. Genuinely, this week it's dawned on me that you guys are the petrol that allow the show to keep going, and as we've mentioned, it seems to help quite a lot of people. So sincerely, thank you. And if you'd like to become one of our wonderful team members, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But right now, for the penultimate time this season, lower the lights. Make yourself comfortable. And of course, leave your disbelief at the door as we listen together to find out why the dead know you're listening. Dear Kevin, hello from a fellow Kevin in Colorado Springs. I'm a big fan of the podcast, and I've toyed with the idea of sharing this story for some time. I wasn't sure how it would fit into the pantheon of stories I've come to love, but I'm sharing it anyway. The following story is true. It happened to my family, but it's not the only dark experience that's happened to my family. The most terrifying part of this story isn't the haunting, nor the paranormal. It's the helplessness. The helplessness that you feel when you're from a family in trauma. When your father is out of control with his alcoholism and drug abuse. And your mum is just surviving the best she can. And the kids, well, they're hanging on for dear life. That's under normal circumstances. Add to that the terror that we walked into, and you have a perfect prescription for, well, the scariest thing in my life. It was 1978, and we were moving. We'd just come from a house in Woodbine, Maryland. The house had exploded because of my father. He had made a decision to turn the gas on, but not pay the bill or the deposit. We lived this way a lot growing up, between poverty, alcoholism, trauma, and bad choices. We were usually at the receiving end of some pretty bad things. And this was going to be no different, as he turned the gas on out in the yard with an instrument of his own making, because he didn't have the right tool from the gas company. He'd sort of precluded the opportunity for the gas company to inspect the lines, to make sure there was nothing like a leak that could possibly be present. So, he turned the gas on. There was a leak, a misfitting along the gas line, near where the gas line met the furnace. So, the furnace, the basement, was filling up with gas all day long. So that evening, when it was getting chilly in the fall, and my sisters and brothers were all in different parts of the house, my father decided to turn the furnace on, to warm the house with the stolen gas he'd appropriated. My seventh grade young sister had just gotten out of the bathtub and was in a towel. Her skin was wet. She was standing beside my father at the top of the basement stairs when he flipped a switch that was meant to turn on the furnace. Instead of turning on the furnace, it ignited the gas that filled the basement, and a flame flew up the stairs, knocking my father and sister against the wall behind them. That explosion was so loud, our ears were all ringing. My father came running through the house. I didn't know what happened, but the ceiling was falling down in the back bedroom. He came through the doorway and said, "Get out, kids." His shirt was on fire. I laughed because it was the craziest thing. But when you see your father and you hear him scream, and you know he's not dead, but on fire, it was like a cartoon or something. It was an instinctive laugh. We all ran outside, tried to gather up around the car about 20 to 25 feet from the house. The house wasn't on fire. The explosion was that large, it put the fire out as quickly as it started. My sister was stood beside me in the chilly darkness. None of us having coats on, her still wearing a towel, she said, "Kevin, hold me." Now that was a strange request. She's a 7th grader, I'm an 8th grader. She has very little to do with me at this time in her life. And to say, "hold me," at that age seemed strange. But what with everything going on, I attempted to put my arms around her and pick her up. And when I did, the skin came off of her arms. It took my brain a moment to realize. She full-on faced this explosion, and she'd been badly burned. I noticed her hair was burnt off. I said, "You're hurt." I think in less than 10 minutes, a helicopter landed and everything became a blur, and my sister was took to the Baltimore burn unit. My father had burns too, but not life-threatening, so he got an ambulance. And they took him to the same hospital, but it was months of recovery, months of skin grafts, months of plastic surgery, living in a slum apartment in New Windsor, Maryland. My father would stay home and just be depressed, probably because he knew that his drinking and decision-making had worked together to damage his daughter to such an extent. And finally, my father arranged to get us a house. And by house, I mean an apartment. In New Windsor, Maryland, in a slum apartment. It was a very bad neighbourhood. A violent and dangerous neighbourhood. And we lived there. We lived there for the hardest winter of my life. My mum being at the hospital with my sister, and my dad staying at home, just feeling guilt and drinking himself into oblivion. The only things in the refrigerator were beer and mayonnaise. At some point in that spring, my sister came home from hospital, still wearing these special things on her legs to try and limit the amount of sun that would get to the scar tissue and turn it purple. She had 30-degree burns on 75% of her body. She's doing okay now, but this was a very rough time for everyone. Living with Dad in that apartment without Mum was very dark. But by that spring, we'd looked our way into a house. A house in Brushtown, Pennsylvania. A farmhouse. An old house, built in the late 1700s. And as we pulled into the driveway in our big Buick LeSabre, our big green land yacht with kids hanging out of every window, we all felt this was something equivalent to a new start. The owners of the house had lived there since the 1700s, but had recently moved after building a house right next door. It was a newer ranch-style house, but it was really important to them that a family lived in their original home. And to kids like us, to have things like a giant barn behind your house was just amazing. A little bit overwhelming. The barn was a two-story affair and was giant. It was built the same time as the house. The house had a slate roof and Edison bulbs, which I'd never seen before on the roof. These are metal spears with glass bulbs on. They're designed to attract lightning, so that the lightning would strike those and take the lightning down to the foundation in the ground, therefore keeping the house from catching a light. Everything about this house was strange. It was connected to a thing called a summer kitchen, which is a small version of the house, behind the house, with a great big fireplace. A swing-out wrought iron arm that would help hold pots and pans as they cooked. The idea was to keep the heat out of the house. So cooking in the summer, for example, if you have a summer kitchen, the heat can permeate outwards as opposed to inwards on an already hot day. There was enough room in the summer kitchen to cook in the fireplace and then to feed people in a larger room that I think had Tungan groove dark-stained wood. It was an amazing thing. There was an awning that kind of sheltered the walkway between the house, the summer kitchen, and another shed or wash house that maybe was designed to wash clothes in. This was all deeply interesting to me. And then there was the driveway behind all of this, and then the barn, and the house had numerous fruit trees. To me, it was kind of amazing for people who were basically living in poverty like we were, that we could afford the monthly rent by somehow selling firewood door to door in the freezing cold Pennsylvania winter. The house had a feel, a strange feel, like we weren't alone from day one. Interesting things would happen. And much of what I'm going to tell you was only shared between me, my siblings, and our parents after we moved from the house. You see, we were a family in crisis. My sister still being injured, my father drinking and trying to forget what happened. The rest of us just hoping for a scrap of attention from our otherwise encumbered parents. Mum desperately looking for work somewhere. But we had a garden that we could eat out of. And that probably saved our lives. Because there was at least some food, and we lived in this house all through that first summer. That spring and summer into winter was when things started to get interesting.
Does anyone really know what hormones do? There's so much talk about women's hormonal health, but most women are left even more confused about what it means for them and what to do about it. Let's leave that confusion behind as we head into the holiday season. Hormone Harmony is a game changer for women struggling with hormonal imbalances that leave them exhausted both physically and mentally. It only contains science-based ingredients that bring back comfort, energy, clarity, confidence, and a sense of balance. Perfect for enjoying the holidays and heading into the new year. Energized. You've heard me talk about them before, and Happy Mammoth, the company behind this phenomenal formula, has helped over 2.4 million women get their lives back and feel like themselves again after years or even decades of hormonal imbalances. The company surveyed 1,831 women to see how Hormone Harmony helped them, and the results are mind-blowing. 86% of women started losing weight, 77% say it improved their mood, and 100% say they feel like themselves again. Hormone Harmony has over 50,000 raving reviews from women all over the world, with 98% of them saying they gladly recommend it to friends and family. This holiday season, give yourself or the women in your life the gift of wellness. Because for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DARKPARANORMAL at checkout.
Today's episode of The Dark Paranormal is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Companies and Affiliates potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
Well, the holidays are almost here, and if you still have names on your list, don't panic, because Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful. They have thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you literally won't find anywhere else. And you'll find those presents that say, I know you, I know what you like, I know what you love. And the chances of you giving someone a present they already have are exceptionally small. There is an artistry set that I've just bought for my little niece, and I know it's a one-of-a-kind, and she will adore it. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the US. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses. So when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting those artists, those small businesses, and every purchase is a chance to choose something remarkable and feel good about where your money goes. Because with every purchase you make with Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a non-profit partner of your choice, donating more than $3.1 million to date. And they have something for everyone, mums, dads, kids, teens, book lovers, gardeners, mixologists, you name it.
So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/darkparanormal. That's uncommongoods.com/darkparanormal for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
For example, one day my sister walked into her bedroom, and before she walked in, she could hear a little girl singing. She slowed down and then stuck her head around the corner and the singing stopped. And that wasn't the only thing. My siblings started feeling things, seeing things, experiencing things. One night, my brother, a year and a half older than me, and the biggest bully in my life at the time, a tough guy, if you will, comes running into my room in the middle of the night and says, "Can I sleep in your bed?" I'm like, "What?" He's like, "Someone's dragging things around in the attic." I'm like, "Okay." I couldn't hear any of that in my room. The next day I'd gone up the stairs, and where you go up the stairs, one of the bedrooms led to a door that went up to the attic. And it had a wrought iron latch on it, clearly made by a blacksmith. This house had the most amazing appointments I'd ever seen. Everything seemed to be made by a blacksmith. Even the barn had similar decor. So anyway, if you lifted this latch, the door would open and you could go up to the attic of the house. The attic was huge. It ran the full length of the house. Tungan grew floorboards and open screens on both ends, so the air could circulate. This was thought to be better insulation by letting the air flow through and keep the rest of the house warmer. I'm not sure if it ever worked that way, as my brother and I timidly looked around the attic. We recognized quickly there was nothing in the attic. No trunks, no mail, no heirlooms, no boxes. Basically, nothing that could be dragged around producing the noises he heard the night before. We looked at each other for a while, and then we never talked about it again. My brother wasn't scared anymore. He didn't hear this thing again and didn't jump into bed with me anymore. But interesting things kept happening throughout this time. I used to go out into the back shed. There was a shed much further out on the property where there were tires and old farm equipment and basically just a place, an empty room you could just sit in and relax. Around this time, my brother had introduced me to the terrible habit of smoking. And this was our chosen spot to go and either light up half-smoked cigarette butts or full cigarettes, the ones I would steal from my mum and dad during the day. I would lay there, leant against the wall, looking up at the rafters in that shed. It was the most peaceful place on the farm. There were times I would go down to the basement, and the basement was a scary place. It was more of a root cellar, with an earth floor. I had a dog at the time, a German Shepherd. We got her for security, because people on the farm would come and steal gas, or look around at night for things they could steal. It was nice to have this added security. She was a dog that feared nothing. Well, one time I tried to take her down to that basement, and the basement had this feeling of doom all the time. So I took her down, and around the third step down, she turned, looked at me, and started growling at me as if she was going to attack me. We weren't going any further than that third step, that was for sure. But once I got her to the top of the stairs again, it took less than a minute for her to become her usual self. I was curious about this. This effect on animals of things, spirits, ghosts, spooks, whatever you will. I tried to take my cat down there, and the exact same thing happened on the exact same part of the stairs. The cat went crazy, scratched me down one side, then the other, and then ran up the stairs. You see, nothing wanted to be in that basement. And I wondered what had happened in that basement. What was in that basement? What was in that house? Well, in that winter, although arguably not a clue, something even bigger happened. And you see, this thing would happen every night at the same time. I had a radio which I left on all the time, because I was scared. And I thought somehow electrical fields may keep ghosts from coming around. Or at the very least, having some sort of noise may protect me in some way. Well, that was my theory. So I always had the radio on when I went to sleep. But every time, no matter what station I had it on, the radio would go off, and all you would hear is static. It would stay like that for about 30 minutes, and suddenly the radio would come back on the air again. I tried multiple stations. The radio just didn't work in that block of time. Every night. And then soon, replacing the static, would come a new set of sounds. Someone walking from the bottom of the stairs, and you could hear the weight. And by the way, when you went up these old stairs, either to the attic or from the first floor to the second floor, you could hear every stair as if someone's weight was on that stair. You could count the stairs as someone was coming up, but in this case, nothing was coming up. I would go out of my door and look at the top of the stairs, and nothing was there. Even though I knew I heard the entire journey from the bottom of the stairs to the top. After the sound of the stairs, I would then hear the sounds of the old floorboards. Anyone that's lived in an old house when you've got old pine tongue and groove floorboards will know the creak. They creak in an unmistakable way. And they would creak in to my brother's room. Then into my sister's room. Now these four rooms are on the second floor, but they weren't big. But they did take up the whole of the second floor combined with the landing of the stairs. But you could distinctly hear this thing, this ghost, this entity, creak into each room until it finally came to my room. I could feel the presence of something hovering over me for a moment, but it didn't feel malevolent. It didn't feel angry. It didn't feel dangerous, but it did feel unbelievably present. This was just something I had to get used to. I developed a theory in my head that kept me from losing my mind during this time. Now, this is not something I mentioned to my parents. None of us talked about any of this. I don't even know all the things that may have happened to my siblings. Only the things they've told me. See, you didn't bring things like this up with mother and father because they had bigger fish to fry. And this is probably the most terrifying thing about growing up the way I did. It's like being in a car, going 100 miles an hour. Your dad's driving, your mum's in the front, you're all in the back, and you notice that something is covering the windshield, and no one can see. But you're still driving at highway speed, and at any moment you know you're going to crash. That's what childhood felt like in my family. This was an old house, and I know it had a lot of history. Then I started having nightmares every night. This theory that I developed was that old houses, old farms, families over generations, was that old families and their houses had families over generations. And these families would write their energies into the horsehair, plaster, and the ceramic, the bricks, into the very wood of the house. It may or may not be a ghost, it may be like a cassette tape. Magnetic resonance on the tape plays back the songs that are written onto the tape. The same thing with an 8-track, or something like a DVD or a CD. Perhaps they're written into the house. These short bursts of energy or feeling or emotion, sadness, happiness, in these places that are old, like churches and schools, or where lots of life is lived or lost, where funerals are held, where weddings are held, christenings are held. All of the most powerful, most potent parts of life are written within the fidelity of the structure. This was happening to me. And when I was feeling this man walking upstairs, maybe he was checking on his kids. He probably lived here 50 years ago, 100 years ago. And he was just living his life now as he did then, in that same structure. Then I thought, maybe he sees me. Maybe someone who lived there before sees me from the future and doesn't know I'm from the future. I don't know. They're from the past. We're all just crossing paths in a house that we've all inhabited. Somehow that made me feel better. The idea of just shared spaces in a universe that didn't have quite enough room for all these different spirits to not cross paths. One night, I heard scratching at my window, the second floor. I heard scratching, and I realized there couldn't be scratching. There's no tree outside. There's no branches. There's nothing that could scratch those windows. The house was a kind of an amazing structure, but outside the windows were still these hooks that once held shutters. At one time, the hooks were still there, but the shutters were long gone. I walked over to the window to see. I parted the curtains, and what I saw was more than what my mind could handle. There was almost an indescribable, terrifying-looking man. His countenance was demonic. He was pale. He looked like something out of an old novel about the 1700s, about colonial America. He had a frock coat on and a vest with a white shirt over it. Black pants that stopped around the knee where white socks took over, and I could tell he was hanging on to the shutter hooks. But I'm not sure what his feet were on that kept him poised at the window. He just had this look, this chilling look, and I could hear in my head the sound that he made. I stepped backwards, I stumbled backwards, 3, 5, 7 steps and fell on my bed sideways. The next morning, I woke on my bed, still sideways. Was it a night terror? Was it a nightmare? Why was I on my bed sideways if it was? I still think back to this day, and I think when this happened, my brain couldn't process it. My brain couldn't handle it. We moved away from that house and into many houses afterwards, but that house would call me. The house was calling me in my dreams. It knew that I knew. As much as I knew these things were real, these things had happened, and I feel like places like that can reach out over space, over time, and almost call you. I think maybe a lot of times these entities in the houses are lonely or sad or desperate. When someone seems to recognize they exist, they get desperate to maintain that closeness, that relationship or connection. I had the same dream every night. I was walking down to that basement. And there were 6 open graves in that basement with light coming out of every one of them. Every time in the dream was the same. I would walk over to the graves and not quite look down inside, and then I would wake up terrified. The house had called once again. I still have dreams about that house even now. And that was 1978. I'm 58 years old. And that house won't let me go. I feel lucky that my family stayed together and that we made it through some really hard times. My dad finally passed away in 1982, releasing us all from the terror of his alcoholism and his drug abuse, and his demonic presence when he was drunk or high. But we've all gone our separate ways, me and my siblings. We've all built lives. We've all tried to overcome the scar tissue that was our upbringing. We love each other and we pray for each other. We talk to each other as we get older, and we're starting to connect again. And the more I talked to them, the more I realized that this happened to all of us. This house wrote on all of us with dark, permanent ink. Thanks for reading my email. I appreciate if you share. No, thank you, Kevin. What an outpouring of honesty. What a horrific upbringing you seem to have had. And my heart truly goes out to you, spirits, occult, supernatural aside. It makes me think maybe true horror lies not in the supernatural, but in the emotional devastation caused by this neglect, instability, and of course, addiction. The trouble with addiction is we very often point at the addicted, and we will chastise, and we will basically crucify sometimes. The thing is, an addiction is an illness. We just don't view it, or should I say, the majority of the public do not view it as an illness, because to them, it's something brought about by the individual themselves. In truth, it's their way of coping with a world that has done something to them. They're just trying to survive. And me saying addiction is an illness is not me trying to reframe or repaint anything. Medical professionals know now addiction is an illness. It just will take quite a long time for the general consensus to agree it's not completely the individual's fault. But moving on to the paranormal side of things, we all know, because we've heard so many experiences on this show alone, how addiction does seem to have this ability, for want of a much better phrase, to lower the spiritual gate and allow darker things in. Also, Kevin, I found it rather brilliant that clearly you haven't heard at that point in 79 of Stone Tape Theory, yet your childhood brain managed to figure out what is one of the most well-known theories in all of the paranormal. But as a parting comment, it did also make me think that maybe the paranormal can be a mirror of the internal. As if the haunting reflects the unacknowledged and untreated emotional scars that Kevin had. I think in this experience it shows the ghosts we sometimes encounter can literally be as much within as they are without. But Kevin, I want to thank you so much for providing Season 19's penultimate episode. Next week, of course, we have our finale, and I don't think you will want to miss that one. And I will say to anyone who thinks we may have next season all tied up, we do. But as ever, we're fully flexible if the right story comes in. As ever, the email address to send your experience to is contact@thedarkparanormal.com. And of course, if you wish to sign up to our Patreon, you will get that earlier than everyone else, ad-free, and the opportunity to get a brand new Dark Bites episode released every Sunday to your podcatcher of choice, whilst the show has its seasonal break, and of course, access to the entire back catalogue of over 100 hours of Dark Bites shows. That's patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. And I'll, of course, speak to you all next week for Season 19's finale. And that will then lead us into our 20th anniversary from a seasonal perspective and some great changes ahead. So, until then, remember, whenever you're discussing the paranormal, always try and leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll see you next time, right here for the finale of Season 19 of The Dark Paranormal.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.